Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Hollywood Casino Press Box, featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne. Every game the Blues play now is a big game because of what's at stake. Tonight, it's the Blues and the Flyers at the Enterprise Center. Joining us now is the voice of the Blues. He is Chris Kerber. Chris, great to be with you. How are you?
Doing good, guys. How are you today?
Very good. No morning skate, but you would anticipate, like you said yesterday, that the goaltender tonight will be Jordan Binnington.
Yep. Would be absolutely shocked if it's not
here. All right, what do we know about this Flyers squad? They had a they had an incredible stretch there. They had like an 18-2 run that kind of put them back in the playoff picture, but it looks like they're 37-35. They're not going to make it. What do we know about them?
Well, it's a team that's got some good young talent, and they still have guys like Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier and some good skill that can play there. Provorov and some good defensemen in there. They had goaltending issues all season long, having used 9 different goaltenders because of injuries. So that's been an issue for them this season, and they just weren't able to get that consistent enough play. You are right. They did go on a good run. And like a lot of teams in the NHL this year, Frank, they've proven at times they can be really good and at times they can be really bad. So they traded away Wayne Simmonds to Nashville. That signaled pretty much the end of their hope. And now, you know, they just play it out. But, shoot, as we've seen from the St. Louis Blues, while you'd like to think that they're going to bring their A game, something mentally kicks in when they're playing some of these teams that where the Blues have not been their best. So they better come ready to go or they'll find themselves on the short end of this one.
What was the takeaway last night? I mean, I guess the upside is you rally. You do get a point out of it. You're down 3-1 in their building, but still, I think the 2 points was huge if you were able to get that. What did you think overall of the play?
I didn't like the play overall, Martin. I thought that the team didn't come out with the energy that it should have for whatever reason. It's not so much the one game, and this is the thing that sometimes is a little hard, I think, to verbalize, but it's not that game yesterday. It's that style of play against the New York Rangers, against the Ottawa Senators, against the Buffalo Sabres, against the Chicago Blackhawks, even against the Arizona Coyotes. That's what concerns me. Not that it happened last night. You're going to have games where on a given night you're flat, things just aren't quite clicking. Maybe you're a little worn down. Maybe you're a little tired. Whatever it may be, that part's going to happen. But we've just seen that happen too much against some of these teams that are down lower in the standings. And to me, that's the concerning part, more so than just the play of one individual game.
Do you think the one moment by Pat Maroon was his finest skilled moment of the 2018-19 season?
Oh, no. I think Pat's had some really good moments, and I think Pat's played some really, really good hockey here in the last couple of months. He's been benefited, and Craig Berube's done a great job by putting some speed on that line with Thomas, and that's helped both Pat and Tyler Bozak. But I like that line, and that line needed to do it. They were keying in very heavily on the Tarasenko line, and you know Vladimir was still able to get 2 points in the game. But that line has been performing really, really well, and that line could be a big swing line for the Blues come playoff time.
It is shocking, and I think I was talking to Strickland about it yesterday. Frank mentioned it earlier today that the Hawks, and I know you need more than 2 guys, but it is hard to believe that they're not among the top 16 teams in the league, that they're not a playoff team.
NHL Public Relations has a Twitter account, and they'll just put out interesting facts and tidbits and nuggets. And they put one out today where the combination of Taves, Kane, and DeBrincat have equated for something like 48% of the scoring for the entire Chicago Blackhawks season. That's actually not the most in the league. The most in the league is when you put the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Leon Draisaitl, and Connor McDavid trio out there with the Edmonton Oilers. What's ironic about that stat is both of those teams are going to be missing the playoffs this year. And I think what you take from that is you still have to have better depth. Now, what's very similar between the Blackhawks and the Edmonton Oilers is the fact that neither team's defense is where it needs to be to win consistently on a regular basis in the National Hockey League. And that to me is the biggest thing. That's the difference with, I think, Colorado. It's what's held Dallas back even a little bit more. So the overall defensive cores on those teams are not all that good, and that's why there are some struggles in there. But pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, you can look now, guys. I think so you go back 4 years ago, and Jamie Benn won the scoring race in the NHL with 89 points. Now, this year, there's something like, I think, where it's 13, 14 people already with 90 or more points. You know, you've got six with 100-plus points. And there's even some teams out there. There's like five teams that have multiple players with 70 points or more on their roster. And those five teams are missing the playoffs. I think only like two or three of the teams that have multiple 70-point players are actually making the playoffs. It's kind of a weird anomaly.
Somebody sent me this scenario. Nashville and the Blues win out. Winnipeg loses tonight at Colorado. The Blues host Winnipeg in the first round. There are a lot of scenarios here.
Oh, yeah. Right now, I mean, you know what it is? All you're doing, you're putting a try box together if you're betting at the horse window. You know, I mean, that's really what it is. You don't know which one's going to come in first, second, or third, but you're really confident you got the top three. So just say, I'll tell you what, here's my $12 bet and box those three, will you?
Hey, we're talking about scoring. How has Tarasenko turned it around? How much of it is Berube or the coaching staff? Because he was off to a slow start, and his final numbers, again, are going to be very representative for a guy who's usually pushing 40 goals. What do you think's changed for him maybe the back half of the season?
I think there's three things I think you can look at. One, coaching. Craig Berube has been very supportive of him, put him in good positions, and then demanded excellence from him. And I do think that Craig's direct approach, and albeit, Craig can get pretty heated on that bench and fired up, but the accountability that Craig has proven has forced Vladimir to play better. That's number one. Two, to me, is Ryan O'Reilly. I think a huge boost to his game was when he was put on that line with Ryan O'Reilly. I think Vladimir Tarasenko has enough respect of the game, respect of his teammates, that he knows and he saw the work that Ryan O'Reilly is putting in. He saw the work that Ryan O'Reilly is putting in every game, not just on away from the games and on the ice, but in the middle of the games as well. And when you're put on a line with him, you've got the responsibility to match that because you didn't want to be the reason that line wasn't scoring. And so that was it. And then three, I do think you have to give the player individual credit. Now, he knew he had to be better, and he's brought that level of play. And when you see the turnaround in him throwing the body around. You see it not just in him trying to get the puck and score. It's him battling for the puck. It's him back-checking. It's him winning puck battles that create those scoring chances, much like Ryan O'Reilly has done all year. To me, that's a three-headed monster there on him.
So the roster, the active roster that we saw last night in Chicago, will be the active roster we'll see next week in the postseason with Joel Edmondson coming in. So who comes out if Edmondson is ready to go?
I'm not convinced Joel Edmondson comes in.
Really?
Yeah, I think Carl Gunnarsson's play has been just okay. I don't think they were very happy last night with Vince Dunn's overall play. That's why at times I think you saw the flip-flopping between Dunn and Pietrangelo. Logic would tell you, yeah, Joel Edmondson should go in. But this team also has played really well and has got a tremendous record when Carl Gunnarsson is in that lineup. I don't know if he's still a little bit nicked up or sore. Obviously, five games is after all the games he's missed, it's hard to get back into the flow a little bit there. But it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them open up the playoffs with the lineup that you saw last night if everybody's healthy.
And, Curbs, when Gunnarsson came back, Charlie Marlowe and I are having this big debate about whether he had been out with an upper body or a lower body. And I said, well, I think it was his wrist. And I said, so that's an upper body. And Charlie said, no, that's lower body. And he holds his arm down by his side. And I said, no, that doesn't count. Like, where are we ever going to get past this upper body, lower body? And, in fact, is a wrist injury, in fact, that is upper body correct?
I think we should consider ourselves lucky that when somebody's out with the flu, they say it's the flu and they don't call it an inner body.
That's true. That's true.
Well played.
I don't know that we will. It's my hope is that as these gambling partnerships become more prevalent, for the sake of realizing that you're going to probably have some income coming off of this. I hope that stuff gets put out there. Gary Bettman was asked that question when the National Hockey League announced a partnership with MGM. And Bettman's response was, I think we're all pretty happy with the way it is right now. I don't know who we is on that. I know it's not the fans. Definitely isn't the media side of things. Could be the players, some of them. But the reality of it is that the players know what's going on. Other players on other teams knew that Carl Gunnarsson is out with a wrist injury. And you know what? I don't know how much targeting I've seen. I don't know the old days of targeting a guy when he's had an injury. You know, I don't know how much of that is still in play. Maybe it's some, but from me talking to guys, I don't see it. So much to the chagrin of all of us, Martin, I don't think I think you're just going to have to be depending on where you're holding your arm to determine the injury right now.
And I would think, especially for the announcer, you guys always know what the real injury is, and there's times they just say, well, no, call it upper body, call it. And you guys know the actual truth, but you just can't, especially when we get into the concussion stuff, everybody kind of knows, but nobody's willing to say it. It's sort of a weird dance that goes on, and I'm sure you guys.
Actually, I'll be honest with you. I've quit asking. I've honestly quit caring. Obviously, when it's lower body and you see a guy limping, you can pretty much tell. And after a little while, eventually you hear, I don't even ask. Okay, when David Perron was out and they were saying upper body, I wasn't even thinking concussion. I wasn't even thinking head initially. I'm like, okay, it's an upper body, you know, and I didn't worry about it. And then finally, right before he came back, I sat in his locker and I said, what is it? And what am I supposed to be saying here? I'm getting a bunch of questions here. What do you want me to say? And, since we're the ones that are getting the questions, give us something to say. So I've just kind of accepted it and said, oh, well, here's the other thing as we get into the playoffs. Now, here's the key thing with injuries for me when we get into the playoffs. If a player is good enough, even if they're injured, but you're going to play him in the game, in a playoff game, don't tell me afterwards that his play was hampered with an injury. So if you lose the playoff series and this guy's had his shoulders all banged up, and that's why his play wasn't good enough to help you win, don't tell me afterwards, because that's no excuse. If he was good enough to be in the lineup in the playoffs, then keep it that way. And I'll go back. We lost that series to Vancouver. Sort of been Keith Tkachuk. Well, we still had
04, maybe.
Bryce Salvador was on the team. Probably 03. And after that series, Bryce Salvador had this, Pavel Demitra had this, and Keith Tkachuk had this, and I looked at the coach and I said, so why'd you play him? You know, I mean, in all fairness, so that's kind of my philosophies on injuries. I understand why they do it. I understand the reasoning behind it. I don't totally agree with it. But come playoff time, you know what? If you're playing a guy, that guy's got to be playing well enough to win. And, you know, while I admire the courage and the toughness to play hurt, if it's hurt enough that afterwards you're going to use it as an excuse for a level of play not being where it needs to be, I just assume you scratch the player from the lineup.
Can you think of a specific example where a team knew about a specific injury and they just went at it? He had a bad wrist. We're going to just chop at his wrist. He had a bad ankle. We're going to go right at that left ankle.
I can't tell you that. You know, having not kind of been down on the ice when that stuff's happened, you know, and I don't remember, to be honest with you, I remember sitting here and a guy going, man, they just kept coming after my foot, or they just kept coming after my shoulder. You know, no, it's not unreasonable at the same time that I say that, guys. If, you know, if somebody goes in with a strained shoulder, it wouldn't, and the other team knows about it, it wouldn't be unreasonable to think that a coach is going to say, every time you get a chance to finish your check on that guy, make sure you finish it and just wear him down. So, again, I understand the reasoning for it. I just think in today's information age, it makes it very difficult on fans.
Good stuff, Chris. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys. Have a great day today. We'll see you at the rink.
We'll be listening. Chris Kerber is brought to us by Petromart. Petromart is a locally owned and operated family business that's been serving the St. Louis area for over 30 years. Each location is just as clean, fast, and friendly as the next. With 50 locations to serve you in a hurry, Petromart offers a wide selection of grab-and-go food items like hot and ready pizza or fresh fruit and salads. Petromart has something for everybody, and it's always prepared fresh and available around the clock. PetroMart, a proud sponsor of Phillips 66 Gasoline and a proud sponsor of the Blues.
I think that needs to be a Fox 2 Sports feature. Is a wrist injury, upper body, or lower body? And him going around the Blues locker room and asking players.
We were arguing about
this. Dude, look, put your wrist next to your body. It's below your hip.
Chief. Hey, Chief, it's Charles here. Just want to follow up real quick on a debate we had in the office.
Hey, Mars.
He stood up. Marzi. He stood up. And I go, I think he's upper body. He goes, what is that? I go, it's his wrist. He goes, that's not upper body. And he's hanging his wrist down below his waist. And I'm like, what if a guy's got short arms? That's an upper body.
It's so stupid.
It's stupid that it exists.
Yes.
And that we had to actually have this debate about what – I think I texted Dan O'Neill, the Blues PR man, and said, just to clarify, and not outing what Gunnarsson had, we're not supposed to know, but is a wrist injury for any hypothetical player, would that be upper or lower body? He said that is, in fact – upper body.
Because it's attached to your upper
body. Correct. But you're like playing the game operation
now. If you trace it all the way up, it's attached to your elbow, it's attached to your shoulder, all the way up, it goes to your upper body. By the way, that was an 0-3 series against Vancouver. Blues blew a 3-1 series lead.
So you mentioned that Dan O'Neill responded to your text. Was that a shot at?
At Mike Caruso, who doesn't pass the basketball. By the way, yesterday you guys were concerned about me because I wasn't feeling well. That was sort of an upper body issue that became a lower body issue.
Yeah.
Okay, just to clarify, okay?
God bless it.
Just to clarify.
You and Charlie are not allowed to use his bathroom today, by the way. You go next door to the restaurant or to Gold's Gym.
The damage they did to our radio station.
Fox 2 is banned from that water closet.
My God.
Very unfortunate that we're being labeled this way. Just show up to work. What we do is we show up to work. Maybe a little unpleasant for others, but we get it done.
Well, next time, stay home. Hey, Frank, the one instance I remember a hockey injury being targeted is in the first Mighty Ducks movie. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
I haven't seen that movie in years.
I'm sure it's going on. I just think less and less so over the years, that the players are less likely to do that.
All right, we'll take a short time out. Food story when we come back.